The Dark Web Files. Exposing the internet's hidden underbelly.
What is the price of your privacy? Not in some abstract philosophical sense. I mean, right now. What is the dollar value of your morning run, your sleep patterns, your heart rate, to a criminal you've never met?
It's a disturbing thought, Mark. I mean, I've been training for a marathon, and my fitness app is, well, it's my constant companion. It's the first thing I check in the morning, and the last thing I see at night. It feels personal, like a tool that's helping me. The idea that someone else could be looking at that data, for reasons that have nothing to do with my health, is, honestly, it's something I've tried not to think about.
And that's the core of what we're exploring today. That feeling of trust we place in these devices. We see them as our digital coaches, our motivators. But in the background, there's an entire industry that sees them as something else entirely, a gateway, a direct line into the most intimate details of our lives.
An invisible personal trainer, but one whose motives are much darker.
Precisely. It's not just about how many steps you took. It's about the path you took to get them. It's your location, your routines, your health vulnerabilities, all collected, bundled, and prepared for a market you can't see.
A market that operates in the shadows of the internet. Today, we are pulling back the curtain on the connection between the booming fitness app industry and the dark web. We'll investigate how your personal health data becomes a hot commodity for cybercriminals.
We're going to delve into the very real risks of digital identity theft that start with something as innocent as tracking a bike ride. We've spoken with top cybersecurity experts and even former insiders who will shed light on just how this information is exploited.
So, before you sync your next workout, you're going to want to hear this. The conversation we're about to have might just change how you view that friendly little app on your phone forever.
So, let's start with the first domino to fall. How does your data, your heart rate, your GPS coordinates from a morning jog, actually leave your phone and end up somewhere else? People imagine a hacker in a dark room, you know, a dramatic breach. And that happens. But often, it's far more mundane.
Quieter how? You mean, it's not stolen, it's just given away?
In a sense, think about the permissions you grant when you install an app. Access to contacts, location, storage. We click agree without a second thought. The app's privacy policy, buried in pages of legalese, might give them the right to share anonymized data with trusted partners.
Trusted partners. That sounds so benign. But I'm guessing it's not.
It's a massive gray area. These partners are often data brokers, and their security might not be as robust as the app developers. So a breach happens there, one step removed from the app you trust, and suddenly, your anonymized data is loose.
And it can be de-anonymized? Is that the risk?
It's shockingly easy. If a dataset has your daily running route, even without your name, and that route starts and ends at your house every day, well, it doesn't take a genius to connect the dots. They aggregate it with other stolen data, maybe from a credit card breach, and suddenly they have your name, your address, your routine, and your credit card number.
Okay, so now this profile of me exists. Where does it go? What does the marketplace for something like that even look like?
Imagine eBay or Amazon. Seriously, these darknet markets, the successors to places like the Silk Road or Alphabay, they function just like legitimate e-commerce sites. They have vendor pages, product listings, shopping carts.
Wait, you're telling me there are star ratings for sellers of stolen identities?
Exactly. Reputation is everything. A vendor who sells high-quality verified data, credit card numbers that work, profiles that are accurate, they get positive feedback. Buyers leave reviews. A++ vendor, data was fresh, you know?
That is deeply unsettling. It's so structured, so professional.
It's a business, a very lucrative one. And they don't just sell raw data. They sell services, hacking services, fraud services. You can buy a person's loyalty card information, for instance. It seems low level, but it's incredibly easy to launder money through.
So my marathon training data, my sleep patterns, it's not just about someone stealing my credit card. It's about building a product. And the product is me.
The product is a key. A key that can be used to unlock your entire digital and, increasingly, your physical life. and the terrifying part is the stability and resilience of these markets. Law enforcement, like with Operation Onimus, will shut one down, say Silk Road 2.0, and three more pop up to take its place. Agora, Evolution, the names change, but the business model thrives.
And they learn from the shutdowns. They get better at security, better at hiding.
They innovate. They move to more secure communication methods, like PGP encryption becoming standard after a big bust. They develop decentralized platforms, like OpenBazaar, to avoid a single point of failure. It's a constant cat-and-mouse game.
And the currency is all cryptocurrency, right? Bitcoin, to make it anonymous.
Primarily. They use Bitcoin, often mixed through services called tumblers, to obscure the trail from the buyer to the seller. Many markets also use a multi-signature escrow system. So when you buy something, your Bitcoin doesn't go directly to the seller.
It goes to the marketplace itself? As a middleman?
Correct. The market holds the funds in escrow until you confirm you've received the goods. In this case, the data. It protects the buyer from a vendor just taking the money and running.
But what stops the marketplace from just keeping the money from everyone?
Nothing. And that's called an exit scam. It happens all the time. A market called Evolution did exactly that. Built up a massive user base, held millions of dollars in escrow, and then one day, poof, the site vanished, along with $12 million in user funds.
So, there's no honor among thieves, but there is a very sophisticated, very paranoid, and very resilient economic system built entirely on stolen information. It's staggering.
Staggering is the word. And what's most unsettling to me is that the exit scam, the theft within the criminal community, is almost a sideshow. The main event, the real damage, is what the successful buyers do with the data they purchase. We've talked about the profile, the key to your life.
I assume we're talking about straightforward identity theft. They get my credit card, they buy a new TV. It's a nightmare, but one I can sort of conceptualize.
That's certainly part of it. That's the low-hanging fruit. But the more sophisticated operators, the ones buying these rich, aggregated datasets, the ones with your health metrics, your routines, your location history, they're playing a much longer game. They're not just stealing your identity. They're building new ones.
Building new ones? What, like a fake passport? A whole new person?
Something far more insidious. It's called synthetic identity fraud. They take a real, clean social security number, often one belonging to a child, because who checks a 5-year-old's credit report? And they pair it with pieces of real stolen data. Your name, an address from another breach, and your routine, your patterns. That makes the new identity seem lived in.
Wait, so they're not pretending to be me. They're creating a ghost, a Frankenstein's monster of data, using a real child's social security number as the spine.
That is a perfect analogy. They create this synthetic person. Then they nurture it. They apply for a low-limit credit card. They use it for small purchases, and they pay the bill on time, every single month. They build a credit history for this ghost.
Oh, that's chilling. So this is a long-term investment for them. They're not looking for a quick score.
It can go on for years. They build the credit score up from nothing to, say, a 750. The ghost gets pre-approved offers in the mail. They apply for more cards, bigger loans, an auto loan, all for a person who doesn't exist.
And the whole time, the child whose social security number is being used has no idea. Their parents have no idea. And the people whose names and addresses were stitched into this thing, they have no idea either.
Complete radio silence until the final act. It's called a bust out. Once the synthetic identity has access to, say, $100,000 in credit across multiple cards and loans, they max it all out in a single weekend. And then they vanish.
And the money is just gone. The banks are left holding the bag for a borrower who was never real. And the child, what happens when they turn 18 and try to apply for a student loan?
Their credit is destroyed before it ever began. They're tied to years of fraudulent activity that is incredibly difficult to untangle. And it all started with disparate pieces of information. A social security number here, a daily jogging route from a fitness app there, that were bought for a few dollars on a darknet market.
That's the price. That's the real price of privacy. It's not just about my data. It's about how my data can become a weapon used against someone I've never met. A decade from now. It's a contamination.
It is. It's a contamination. And that's the piece that I think gets lost in all of this. We focus on the individual breach, the single stolen credit card. But what we've been talking about today is a supply chain, an entire functioning global economy built on harvesting pieces of us and assembling them into these ghosts in the machine.
So, what are we supposed to do? I mean, honestly, am I supposed to throw my fitness tracker in the bin? Go back to a paper map for my runs? It feels like the only winning move is not to play. But we have to play.
And that's the trap. The feeling of inevitability. But it's not all or nothing. It's about being conscious. It's about treating your data like you treat your house keys. You don't just leave them lying around. So you read the permissions before you click agree. You use a different, complex password for every single app. You turn on two-factor authentication wherever you can.
The basic digital hygiene stuff.
The things we all know we should do, but often don't. And on a bigger level, it's about demanding more from these companies. We give them our data, this incredibly valuable resource. We should be demanding to know exactly how they're protecting it. Who are these trusted partners? What are their security standards? We have to start asking the hard questions.
It's exhausting. The burden is always pushed back onto the user. Be vigilant. Manage your 100 passwords. Read the 50-page legal document. While these billion-dollar companies create the very systems that put us at risk.
I don't disagree with that. There's a huge imbalance. But for now, that vigilance is the best defense we have. We have to be our own gatekeepers. Because as we've seen, once the data is out there, it never really comes back. It just gets bundled and resold on a marketplace with a 5-star rating system.
So I guess that's the takeaway for me. I started this conversation worried about my marathon data. Now, I'm thinking about the digital shadow my kids are already creating. The long-term price, it's so much bigger than one person's workout.
It's the invisible infrastructure of our lives. And today, we've tried to shine a small light on the part of it that operates in complete darkness. The goal isn't to scare you away from technology, but to make sure you walk into this connected world with your eyes wide open.
Because someone is always watching, and they're putting a price on what they see. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay safe and stay aware.